So what's your role in the wiki and all the online stuff at the moment?
Well, one of the roles as a technical tutor is to focus on getting documentation, as well as also supporting students learning through mentoring. But then backing that up, like I say, with putting documentation. Stuff would be documentation in relation to stuff that you don't necessarily find in the manuals. Because applicational manuals will only focus on how to use that application.
Yeah.
But it's how do you bridge that kind of content across to other things.
Yeah.
So, for instance, an example of creating your dissertation or a report that you've got to do, how do you get that content from Word across into InDesign, how do you get images from Photoshop into InDesign, and things like that.
Yeah.
And then it also opens up a wider remit as well in terms of actually trying to look at new ways that you can make new tools. And so other features that I kind of get involved in is sort of development as well in relation to doing things like geo-blogging, adding that functionality to our existing blogging server that we have here.
Yeah.
And also creating mobile phone templates, so focusing on mobile learning, where our students can write a blog entry and that's repurposed into a format that can be then viewed on your mobile phone if you've got internet access. And so it's always sort of striving to, you know, to sort of look at innovation while being innovative in your role, but at the same time also doing the bread and butter side of that and doing, you know, the sort of documentation and other bits and pieces for that, be it for the wiki or be it for Moodle, and so on. And like I say, you know, sort of mentoring students through their design process on bits and pieces in relation to sort of using computer technologies for that. And also other things as well, sort of supporting students through shows and things.
Yeah. Do you think your job here at Ravensbourne is like slightly different in the fact there's a lot of creative people, so a lot of dyslexia? Do you think that's an aspect that you have to, you angle your work slightly differently?
Yeah, I'm being dyslexic myself. It helps me focus on what areas where I think sort of, you know, students with dyslexia and so on will need sort of, you know, guidance on. And there again, that's sort of inputted through using like, you know, putting content out onto the wiki or onto Moodle in relation to that. In terms of making stuff accessible and easy to get hands on.
Do you think like you're saying, there's things you can't find in the manuals or things that are much harder to find. Do you think this sort of like more hands-on sort of vocational approach is better aimed at dyslexic, that sort of like mindset or as a creative mindset?
I view it with them in mind. I don't view them as being the sole consumer, because of course, you know, there are other students out there which aren't dyslexic. So, you know, it's just one of the considerations that I do take on board when creating content. And you know, in terms of like, you know, how accessible can you make this content, sort of working to within that.
So we'll have a look at the digital stuff the college is implementing at the moment. So we've got the wiki and the forums and the blogs and everything, and it's all starting to come together now. How do you feel the tutors and the students are going to react when it starts like becoming fully implemented?
I think it's going to be quite a challenge.
Yeah.
Not so much for students, I don't think, but more for staff. Because students these days, a lot of them have got their own personal blogs, using various services out there, like the blog and so on. And it's also the same with other things as well, like photo hosting in terms of things like Flickr, and other sort of various equivalent media services.
Picasso just bought a new one that's looking good.
So yeah, with all these sort of various services out there, students are very attuned
to that stuff.
Yeah, to using those technologies. Not necessarily maybe within an educational content, but within a personal, you know, way, they know how to use it. And I think the staff, I think there's of a certain generation, there is that kind of maybe I think there is an age, I don't mean it in terms of ageism,
like a generation
than anything else. But as these technologies evolve, it will definitely change the way that people will work.
We had the guy from Apple come over and have the chat about podcasting and stuff. Do you see it playing like a key role in Ravensbourne's near future, or do you think it's more
I think it should play a key role in terms of that. With every college in the United Kingdom, we'll have to abide by the law in terms of accessibility and other related things like that. And therefore, this addresses so many wonderful key things all in one hit, kind of thing. In terms of making things accessible in relation to, of course, ledger notes, things like that. The fact that the content's fresh, the fact that you don't get the breakup in the content, you record exactly what you want to record, and that's all job done. So it's not like faffing around with tapes or faffing like in a video camera or something like that. Maybe missing a few minutes of the lecture out, and happens to be that they're the key points or whatever. The fact that also it creates blended learning. Students can decide what podcast feeds they want to subscribe to. So they get what content they want. And it becomes more enriched, because at the moment education is very much works on a sort of formula base. Your lecturer says read these books, you read these books, you then echo that content out in your own way. Whereas a lecturer could say subscribe to these and these feeds, and then it's up to you to subscribe to whichever feed you want and pull down whichever podcast you want. And therefore you have much more of an enriched learning experience that you probably wouldn't necessarily get from a book. In terms of that, it's a very formulaic set out, sort of stage by stage.
Very customised.
I think for bigger institutions, I think with the whole kind of podcasting I think students from bigger institutions will get much more of an enriched experience, and that's purely because of the size and the scale and the variety of the people that they'll have contact with. Here you have probably less contact with people than you would do, like I say, at a bigger institution, and so therefore I think if you have a research and have a look at how other institutions are doing podcasting, probably more on the state side than the UK
In America, I can't remember where it was, but a lot of the bigger colleges podcast their stuff and make it public space, so the public can log on and get it. And
learning for all kind of thing.
And I really like that idea. And I spoke to Fiona Duggan about it, and she said it's more like the information itself is worth very little. It's the actual one-on-one time with the tutors who can explain the information to you that's why you come to college.
But mind you, I still think there's quite a lot of stuff that you can get out of and that you can learn about. For instance, I don't know anything about, I've never been to a formal class on how to write AppleScript, for argument's sake. But it's just material that I've got off the internet. Bits of information here and there, all part of that sort of blended learning experience. Which then comes, it's not a formulaic book that I've followed. But I think, with the whole podcasting side of the audio video stuff, it makes a huge difference. And also how the presenter presents their subject matter. If you've got a good lecturer and they're very good at presenting, i.e. being an actor as such, they can make that content really, really stimulating. And you'll just ooze it in, as it were. But then if you've got a very monotone voice and you don't, it's the psychology of how it's presented, and if that's presented in a way, sometimes you don't need to have that one-to-one access, because the way it's being presented to you is, you can just take it in. And if the content's shaped well in terms of how it's sort of nice bite-sized chunks, then you can probably do a lot of self-study, which can then
And this could always be combined with like a public forum or a public wiki where where people can say, I watch podcast 156 with Leighton Reed. What did you think about blah blah blah? And then you can always go that way. But then, what sort of stance would the college take? Because that's in a way that's kind of devaluing their degrees because it's allowing people that aren't paying money access.
I mean, this is where you then start to put a price on content and how much is that content worth. I think one interesting thing can be another thing to look at is also to sort of see commercial courses. One of the things that I'm very curious about is to having a look at the commercial pilots courses. There's a company called Bristow's, based down near Bristol, which basically do remote study packages. It'd be interesting to okay, they don't do podcasting, but they've got everything else in terms of forums, direct email contacts to staff and things like that. And you get your kind of like hard copy kind of book format stuff that you have to follow. And then you also get a couple of CD-ROMs with a few little flash movies trying to explain how an engine works and things like that. But it'd be very interesting to see how the commercial world presents content to an academic world, because I think there's probably quite a big extreme in terms of how academics present content and how commercial training organisations present content. And I think it'd be a very, very, very interesting thing if you could sort of maybe tap into sort of finding out how these guys present stuff.
Yeah, it's quite interesting where the crossover comes between the commercial and the academic. So, where do you see sort of the future of Ravensbourne's VLE? Can you see the wiki taking the place of the forums? Or
I think so. I mean, I think I view I very strongly view the wiki as being, you know, for something that covers cross subject matters, for tutorial related things, and for things that aren't specific to units go on the wiki.
Right.
Things that are specific to units go on Moodle.
Right.
So, for instance, lecturers will put their notes, we put their book lists, we put their podcasting lists, we put their RSS feed lists, or blog lists, all on Moodle.
Yeah.
But where you've got the difference in terms of like, how do you use Moodle, how do you use blogs.rave.ac.uk, how do you use all these other things within the college, how do you set up your Mac to or PC to pick up the college mail?
Yeah,
all that through the wiki.
Okay. Do you think the forum is a very strange place to look around? It's sort of you get a lot of the same sort of people. Do you think that's because the way the college marketed it, or do you think it's just that students haven't really accepted it? The only reason I really know how to use forums is because I've been using design forums for years, and that's where I've got my grounding from.
I think the other thing is also is that the forums are for people who self-elect themselves to be part of a group, and therefore people want to contribute in whatever way they do because they want to. I think when you get forums in an educational environment, I think that gets a little bit blurred. You go to a forum on how to use Photoshop or how to use InDesign, and it'll be students, it'll be practitioners, lecturers, hobbyists.
Yeah.
And they've all elected to be on that forum, and therefore they all have the sort of more or less the same mentality and view that they're not going to abuse it or ask stupid questions or use it to sort of, smear somebody or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas when you've got forms within an educational institution, it is kind of self-elected in relation to who uses it, but it gets very, very blurred in terms of how people use it.
Well, I mean, it could just simply be down to, like we said, it's only sort of been in the last 3 or 4 years they've really popped into the existence, so it might only be the select few that have actually got into them in that time. And in the next sort of 5 years, the wiki will take off because things like Wikipedia and it's such a massive resource now.
Yeah. I think it will. I think as people start using it more, I mean, it'll be like I say, it's like, you know, self-elected people, but then people won't be so much more self-elected that it will become ambiguous technology, and they use it every day at school and things like that. And I think with school teachers I think are probably more informed about new technology than actual lecturers, tutors, whatever you want to call academics, whatever you want to call people which work in higher education. Because school teachers get, I think, more access to funding in relation to staff development in new technologies. And so that will reflect back on the students, and the students will be more aware of new technologies in terms of, like, you know, how good practice and how to use a wiki, good practice and how to use VLEs and things like that. And I do think that, you know, this is going to become, I mean, as long as the government keep putting money into the schools, which they do, the sort of the social divide in terms of new technologies and understanding becomes ever so bigger.
Because a lot of the courses have just been through their revalidation. Did many of the lecturers come to you or the ICT department and say, right, I'm revalidating my course, is there anything you think I should build into my curriculum to? Or was it more the other way around, where you were asked to forward your opinions anyway? Because from a personal point of view, I think it needs to be written more into the curriculum. That students should be posting blogs, they should be keeping work blogs.
Oh no, definitely, 100%. I think the other thing is that also disseminating information is a very difficult, it's a very hard challenge, because you can send an email out to everybody and people will read it and forget it, and then they won't really bother searching through their inbox to find that email again. But then equally, if you keep spamming them about resources, they'll just ignore you and put their backs up in terms of not wanting to use the resource. So you have to sort of find a very fine line, and so these new resources, like in relation to blogging and, you know, how to use wikis and so on and how to use all of this, comes out mainly in the student induction in the first year. When they get enrolled. Now this year the process is changing a little bit because of different people running different departments now and things like that. But hopefully the sentiment will be echoed out in terms of when we do our talks in the lecture theatre about, you know, what students have got access to.
Okay. Yeah, because it would be nice if it was, like, written into the deliverables of each brief. You have to have one entry a week.
And I think also it also sharpens up skills. I mean, okay, I'm dyslexic and, writing is not my best thing, but it's actually quite enjoyable, write a blog. And I think in terms of when design, I mean, because of course design students don't do that much heavy duty writing here compared to, say, like, if you're doing a degree in English or something like that, five essays a week or whatever. But the thing is that by just, keeping your hand in all the time, writing on your blog sharpens up your writing skills. And at the same time, it then reflects in terms of how you use those writing analytical skills within reports that you have to write and submit, and it makes that whole process easier rather than that, oh shit, I've got to do that report this term, and everything all focuses around just this one report. If you keep constantly doing it, it's like exercise, if anything. And also it builds your web presence as well up at the same time, because search engines like Google and so on love to index university sites. And so, therefore, you're going to find yourself quite high up in the old Google rankings. Pretty quickly.
It's a good place to be.
Yeah.
Presuming you don't cock up somewhere.
It's all good for that in terms of, raising your internet profile. You know, if a company are interested in you, no doubt they'll sit down, put your name into Google and see if you're out there. And if you're out there, then, it kind of adds to your credibility.
Do you know much about or have an opinion on PLEs?
In terms of personal learning environments.
And it's all about sort of like online CVs and an education profile type sort of layout. So I think it's a really sort of interesting kind of thing. But I'm still not sure what format it would take.
Yeah.
It's in like a university environment. Would it lay on the wiki where each person has their own, like you have your own personal profile?
I think it possibly would.
Yeah.
I mean, I use my personal wiki for putting documentation up and also links to documentation that I've written as well. So I sort of use it as a mixture of two things, of, you know, creating as well as also referencing. And that's the kind of function that I use my personal wiki for.
I know it's a matter of web space and the college is already quite stretched, but for instance, you could use it in combination with our hosted space and ideas like the G Drive, the Google Drive, where you could start saving your work onto the wiki.
Yeah.
So then, like you said, you're building up a presence, and the more stuff you've got on your wiki, the bigger you're going to stand out in the crowd.
Yeah.
So you could then start blogging, and you could start linking to, I wrote this report, or I wrote this blog entry on this, here it is, and you could link off here.
I think also getting back to your communication thing, I mean, that hits another nail on the head as well in terms of that, you know, we look at our presence out there as being on the internet in terms of what makes us popular or not.
Yeah.
And whereas I think when you look at that generational gap, their presence is, well, how much exposure have you had? And it's like, well, all right, Design Week's got a circulation of, like, you know, how many thousand?
Yeah.
But my blog
has
got access to, you know,
billions
of people out there. It's like, why do I need to, you know, try and desperately get an article in, you know, Design Week or something like that, or Architectural Review? Rupert Murdoch, I think it was, well, I can't quote him, paraphrase him, but I mean, basically said, if any, you know, print industry kind of thing, more on the lines of that, you know, if anybody dismisses the internet in relation to their business model, then be it at their peril. Because you'll be out of business. I mean, people don't have to go to a newspaper's website to see photos of an event. I mean you can go on Flickr and find photos of September the 11th or 7/7. You can then find, you know, people's reactions to that in relation to whether they're there or not through their blogs.
Yeah, and they've got comments on the pictures and all of that sort of stuff.
Exactly, and that, you can then build up a picture of multiple opinions to be able to formulate your opinion, not one opinion that's been echoed through the representation of a newspaper.
No, there's, I've seen quite a cool thing the other day, I can't remember where I saw it though. It was like remote desktop, only, you know, where you can see like each other's workspace, you work on the same space. It was like that, but it was using XML, so you're actually editing a web page together.
Yeah.
So you could, you both saw the same page, and you could see as people created buttons and links to different things. You could type.
Sub-Ether Edit, was it? No.
I can't remember what it was.
Right. Using Bonjour, probably.
Yeah, something like that, It was really cool. I thought it was a really interesting way to work, because you could do it with the whole class of people.
I mean, Zero, well, Bonjour is Apple branded. The proper name for it is called ZeroConf.
Right.
Or Zero Configuration. Technology has been around for about 5 or 6 years.
Oh, really?
I've used it for about 2 or 3 years in Miles, because it's like, if I write something, then you can quickly edit it on the fly on the local network.
Yeah.
So it saves you all the time and hassle of
of
emailing documents and things like that. The only downside is if you lose network connection, that's the only issue. But I think Bonjour has got a lot of Bonjour has got a lot of benefits it can offer to students in terms of working collaboratively. I mean, like, you could sit in a lecture theatre, everybody could open up their Mac, say, and then you could all collaboratively write notes together on whatever you're talking about. Or if you're a broadcasting student, you could get a bunch of broadcasting students together and they could do a whole course on, you know, how they're going to write a script, and get five of them to all come together, sit down.
Yeah,
and they don't even have to be in the same room as long as they're on the same local network. There's an application called iStorm.
Right.
And basically, yeah, it mixes a bit of instant messaging, collaborative text as well. But it gives you rich text format so you can drag and drop images as well as also change fonts and text coloring and things like that.
Yeah, because I don't know where Google are going to go with Writely. You know, they've acquired Writely now. I went on it the other day and it says we're currently down, waiting to be Googleified or whatever it is. But it'd be quite interesting if you could do collaborative stuff on there. Turn it from a word processor, as it were, to more of a an online workspace, collaborative workspace, where you could do the rich stuff and you could add the images.
I think with them taking on people like Microsoft, they have to sort of go down that route of trying to find innovative ways, low-cost solutions that they can offer to users that they can use in their day-to-day lives that Microsoft just can't offer. I mean, at the moment, you look at the Microsoft offering and everything's very much static applications. But with collaborative web applications like that, collaborative blogs, that kind of shifts the shifts the way that people write. People in the past would use Word to write documents, or to write small letters, or to write other bits and pieces in terms of writing memoirs. But that's all moved over to the blogs. And if blogs but then become collaborative, which they can do, which you can do, blogs.rave.ac.uk is a bit fiddly, but you can set up other users to have access to your blog, and you can actually set permissions for what they can and can't do. And so if Google go down that route of doing, more collaborative stuff with technologies that people know and are comfortable with, like, word processing and things like that, then that kind of leaves the whole Microsoft Office suite in the sort of
bin.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm not going to keep you any longer.
No, it's not.
Just good.